The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should have an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
All right, you're very welcome along to Thursday's football show. Nathan with you through until 10 o'clock this evening. We'll get straight into it. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent is on the line. Evening, Dan.
Evening, Nathan.
So, the end of one part of the FAI saga has finally arrived. A refinancing deal with the government has been agreed, and it seems as though it's a good deal for the FAI, who have debts of £62 million. The story is that Sport Ireland funding has been restored and is in fact going to double from almost €3 million to almost €6 million a year until 2023. A sum of €800,000 is going to go towards the redevelopment of the men's and women's domestic leagues. The government's going to provide an interest-free loan of €2.5 million each year from 2020 to 2022 to protect the Aviva Stadium and also to ensure that Ireland will be able to host games at Euro 2020. All in all, it comes to a bailout of €25 million. We'll chat to Dan in just a moment, but let's hear from some of those who were down at government buildings today, starting with the Sports Minister Shane Ross, who outlined the plans for funding the organisation and the conditions of the loan.
The agreement that we made today, which involves all partners, all stakeholders taking pain, that means the bank and UEFA and ourselves, will mean that we have agreed to restore government funding to the FAI. The 2.9 million will be doubled. It will go to 5.8 million. That money will go to programs which we've already been giving money to. It'll be ring-fenced, but it will guarantee that those on at the grassroots are catered for, looked after in a way which is absolutely vital, because grassroots football is what we are primarily worried about and concerned about. The funding which we have agreed to provide will not be unconditional. There will be strict conditions attached to it. We've also agreed to an interest-free loan of 2.5 million per year for the next 3 years to the FAI to pay their license fee, which will involve the running costs of the Aviva. If there was a question of that not being paid or being defaulted upon, grassroots football, international matches and other future fixtures would have been threatened. That is an interest-free loan, but the conditions on it are strict, and if they're not fulfilled, the money, of course, will not be paid. The conditions are, broadly speaking, that there should be strict reform of the Constitution and the Council of the FAI. The corporate governments should be raised to a satisfactory level, that internal controls should be improved to levels which will be decided, that there should also be protection for the workforce. Throughout the discussions which we've had, one of our primary objectives has been to protect and promote the League of Ireland, but also, and that will be given more funding in what we have agreed to today, but also that the workforce should be protected. We've had discussions not only with all the parties involved here, but with the League of Ireland. We've had discussions with the workforce, with representatives of the workforce and the players. And we are absolutely determined that there will be no compulsory redundancy programme, and that the workforce who have served Irish football so well should be catered for and reassured that their jobs are not in jeopardy. I'd like also to say that the earlier redundancy scheme, which was suggested in earlier meetings, is off the table, and the particular emphasis should be put on the low to middle income workforce who should not feel that their jobs are in any way under threat.
Yeah, certainly good news there for FAI employees. That is the Sports Minister, Shane Ross, speaking outside government buildings earlier today. Let's hear from the FAI's interim CEO, Gary Owens. He outlined the importance of the funding for implementing future plans for the FAI.
Well, it's an important and great day for us and in the Football Association of Ireland. It's particularly an important day for our staff. I'm only there a week, and I could sense all the uncertainty that they've had to work with over the last 9 months and probably longer. We can now move forward with confidence. In my position as CEO, I couldn't really do anything without an agreement like this. I'm very confident now that we have the funding to do all the things we want to do, and we can move forward. We need to regain public trust. We need to build trust with all the key stakeholders to continue to get them to fund in our sport. We have hundreds of thousands of people involved. We have volunteers all over the country who turn up every weekend, who love this sport. And now I feel confident that we have the framework and the infrastructure to move forward with confidence. And from tomorrow, we'll be able to sit down with our staff with certainty, tell them where we're going and what we're doing. And I look forward to it.
That is the FAI's interim CEO, Gary Owens. Also down there was the FAI's interim deputy CEO, Niall Quinn. And he spoke at the announcement and declared today as a new dawn for Irish football.
Thank you, Minister Ross, Minister Griffin. On behalf of everybody in football, I'd like to thank you. And those people behind the scenes, both in your office and with Bank of Ireland and with UEFA, for having the faith and trust that football will change in this country to a level that you can be proud of and that you feel safe putting taxpayers' money at risk in that bet. We're here to say that we're going to now jump on that opportunity. We're going to thrive on the ability that you've given us. And I believe the power of football will come home and resonate far louder, far more dearly than the shadow that has cast itself over it in the last year. You will see a new association with new empowerment, with new structure, with new culture, and with a love that's been questionable. And people who truly do love the game have had to put up with so much in the last year. But what we say to them today starts today, as Gary said, where we move forward, as Minister Griffin said, where there's a line that we go forward from. And that's the best bit of the news today. And happy to answer some questions now to you, but from all of the stakeholders. Football in this country can now really rise. There's a number of reasons for that. And right from the League of Ireland becoming more prominent and getting treated much better than ever in the past, everything below that will come with it. We'll have grassroots, great stories to tell you about that got lost in the narrative in the last 12 months. You know, the work of the football team in this country. It is Team Ireland. We're Team Ireland in every aspect. With Mick McCarthy's team going to Slovakia, with our under-15s who are going to camp to take part in a very important tournament, our under-21s who are flying the flag so brilliantly, to our ladies who are really making us proud and who I'm delighted are ring-fenced in some real proper new funding to make that game thrive. Gary, myself, the rest of the board are here as well today just to give the message to the people out there. Now we have the tools to go about changing football in this country. We can't wait to do it, and we hope to make you all proud.
Yeah, that, of course, was the FAI's interim deputy CEO, Niall Quinn, speaking at today's refinancing deal. Not a bailout is how they're trying to spin it. Dan, you were writing on The Independent Online, celebratory tone would be inappropriate. But in light of everything that's gone on at the FAI over the past year, this is a good day for Irish football?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have to say that. And like some of the, you know, various reforms that are laid out would be encouraging. I think the point I'm making is just that like there's still obviously a lot to do. And I understand why, I completely understand why people involved. I mean, there's an election coming. You know, it's been a turbulent time. Staff need something. People on the ground need something to be heartened by and encouraged by. So I completely understand why, you know, the presentation would be in that sort of that celebratory sort of tone to a degree. But I guess I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, so much has gone wrong and there's so much to be fixed that you you just have to sort of be careful about being too over the top with that, because maybe it's because over the last couple of weeks, you know, all the vibes were there that a deal was going to be done. So it's not as if it's come as a massive surprise. Maybe that's just a reflection of people who are following it closely day to day, and for some of the general public, this is huge. But there's more to come from here. We touched on it a bit the other day, you know, like various parts of the game who are suspicious of other parts of the game and whatnot, and like all those issues haven't been solved by an announcement today. But no. Nonetheless, it's a positive step forward in the right direction. You have to acknowledge that.
In particular, and immediately for FAI staff, who at times and quite often over the last year, we do try to bring up the regular run-of-the-mill staff who weren't in those higher echelons, who weren't on those massive salaries, who had looked, even as recent as 2-3 weeks ago, were going to be facing into huge upheaval, a lot of redundancies, and it seems now, because of this refinancing deal, that that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, it would appear so. I think the language is significant, and you know, pointed references to low to middle income FAI staff, you know, in the context of I suppose the overall picture. And I mean, this is something again that had been floated. I mean, some of the things going around, like the, you know, 66 independent directors on the board and various other ideas, that they had been doing the rounds, and that also there would be no compulsory redundancies, and any departures they would maybe hopefully be voluntary. But you know, we'll see, you know, how voluntary they prove to be with certain people if they choose to hang on. But it is very true. I mean, the FBI is, you know, as a staff, it's you know, it's a couple of hundred people. You know, there's some based in the office, some RDOs and whatever, who are sort of out on the road. And they have all been tarred with the same brush of FAI. So FAI crisis, FAI, you know, the FAI is toxic, the FAI is a joke, whatever language you use. You know, for people walking around with FAI tracksuits on and you know, trying to go out and do their work, it's probably been, it has been very demoralising for those people. And there would be a feeling amongst some of those FAI staff that they would not just look at the FAI board and people who have departed, they would also look at sort of, you know, people who are in the inner circle or high-income FAI staff who were, again, whether they knew or were fully aware of the overall financial picture, whether they can always say they weren't fully informed of A and B and C. I mean, they were a part of like implementing a day-to-day culture there, and all these culture, you know, the culture of silence and whatnot. If there had been stronger staff around, I'm not saying everything would have been avoided. Of course not. But you know, they have to accept that they sort of played their own part by saying nothing at times, or maybe being sent out to spread the message, which you know, wasn't a great message ultimately. So I think the mood has changed, and there will be a feeling that if you want reform within the building, maybe you know, you might just need some fresh faces to freshen things up, really. And if you're going to buy the new FAI as a thing, and you can't have certain people out representing the FAI who are synonymous with the old one. And that goes to the board, and that goes to council, but it also goes to prominent staff positions as well too.
I guess everyone is well aware of the level of debt at this stage, heading towards €70 million. Negotiations around this bailout then, particularly over recent weeks when the independent directors came in and Roy Barrett came in, and it seems that certainly marked a shift in the government's approach to dealing with the FAI. Like getting the restoration of Sport Ireland funding and doubling that to almost €6 million a year, getting an interest-free loan for the Aviva Stadium for 3 years. Has this bailout, are they getting far more than they ever expected, those involved around the FAI?
Yeah, I mean, the increase in funding was on the cards. The interest-free loan is something that hadn't necessarily, I have to say, you know, hadn't been out there much before the last sort of 24 hours or so. And I guess it is tied in with the Aviva, and there was always a feeling that the Aviva and the terms and conditions and commitments around the Aviva were going to be a part of the deal. Now, at an early stage, there was talk about selling stakes or whatever it might be, and that ultimately didn't really turn out to be a viable option when you considered the sort of terms and conditions and how it operates. So I mean, this is a version of that, and just listen to the clip there of Shane Ross talking about you know, how this was essential even for Euro 2020 and hosting games, and you know, the FAI were the peroration of the that stadium company deal. Mm. So that is a bonus. I mean, it is a loan. It still has to be repaid. It still has to be added to the list of long-term terms and conditions, you know, and a reminder, and as I touched on in the piece today, that, I mean, this saves off the threat of liquidation, and it gives a degree of solidity, but the FAI still needs to do a lot of things right over the next couple of years to manage cash flow and to ensure that everything ticks along. But
yeah.
The basic point you make there about whether it's better than expected, I think there's little things within it, you know, and even there's, you know, a certain amount of the state funding being allocated to men and women's national leagues and so on. I think what has happened in the last month or so is I do think that people in government have started to listen to people who've been making representations to them, and they have taken that on board. And even that day in the Dáil where they made some ill-judged comments about the League of Ireland, funnily enough, that might have worked out well in the long run for people who are in the league, because it stirred a sort of an anger that maybe people in government just weren't aware of.
Two sides to this then. That's the financial bailout side. There's also reforms that are going to have to take place for this refinancing to happen. You would expect they would, but some of them are quite interesting. So you touched on it there, amending the 12-person board to consist of 6 independent directors, prevent board members from joining FAI board committees, so the likes of John Early, Donald Conway, Noel Fitzroy will be ruled out from joining FAI board committees. Down to basic enough things like a revised travel and match ticketing policy, which is going to have to be approved by the board and a governance oversight group, which will be chaired by Sport Ireland. Commit to protecting low and middle income earners from compulsory redundancies for the next 18 months. Tell Sport Ireland of salary of all staff, including international team coaches and managers. Draft a 5-year strategy to develop League of Ireland and Women's National League, and commit to helping League of Ireland clubs leveraging all sources of capital funding to improving stadia. It does seem as though that the League of Ireland is very much front and centre in a lot of this.
Yeah, it does. And again, as I sort of touched on there, I think that now is the time for League of Ireland to sort itself out. Mm. And I guess show that it's worthy of it to a degree. And I mean, a big part of that, I do believe that the people within the new sort of FAI, people at the forefront, I think they are conscious of the need to improve the league. Now, they still have to win over. I'm talking about Niall Quinn and his sort of associates. They still need to win people over within the league, and I think that's a very important next step. If they do that, they are in a position to try and plot a better future. Yeah. And we still have to hear about, well, you know, again, like, you know, how much money there is to go around. I mean, the figures are great, but you can break them down and divide them by club, and they might necessarily be massive figures. So it has to be accompanied by an actual coherent plan to go with it. So
because Niall Quinn was very positive there, the way he was talking about this new era for Irish football and Team Ireland and the football family, and himself and the independent directors and those new faces that have come in have obviously had a very positive influence on the politicians. But going back to our conversation last night, just how big a job is Niall Quinn facing and getting to grips with the more grassroots politics of Irish football? And do you sense that he's probably very aware of what sort of a challenge that's going to be?
I think so. I think people have told him. But again, sometimes ignorance can be bliss until you get really stuck into it and realise that it's, maybe how deep some of it might run. I'm not saying he's ignorant too. I'm sure he's aware, but like, there's obviously just there's complications. I mean, a line that jumped out for me is about it was known that council members who did 10 years of service or more service would have maybe 3 more years left. And it seems to be bringing that forward and phasing them out quicker. And if you tie that in with ex-board members being ineligible to take part in any of these committees going forward, I mean, there's a lot of people who were walking around the FAI EGM last Saturday when I was there in Blanchardstown, who really are going to, looks like they're just going to have to be gone. And I know that some, I suppose, veteran officials were bracing themselves to go, and they accepted that their time was up to a degree. But others, I don't think, did believe that and sort of believed that their influence would remain, even if it was not, they were no longer sitting on the board or, you know, front and centre, but they'd be working away in the background. But I think that this is something that, again, I do think, credit where it's due, that people in government have taken some of this on board. Some concerns that people have had about background manoeuvring on board.
Right.
And they have acted on that and they've met a conditional. But we'll see how people accept it. I still would assume that there's rule changes and various things that would have to be voted through to fully endorse this. But, I mean, again, they're offering a bag of cash here. So, I mean, who's going to oppose that deal, really? What power do you have?
Another line that stood out from Niall Quinn, and I guess you got to play the game in part with this, was when he said, on behalf of everybody in football, thank you to the politicians. And like, these are the individuals and the sporting organisations that were supportive of the previous regime, whose hands-off approach helped enable the previous regime, who got us into this crisis in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, these are all parts. I'm just sort of reading various reactions and I'm just wondering how some of these people are going to respond to this. And I think that is an element of the next phase to this in the coming days. But there needed to be, we've been over this to a degree as well, and this will continue, and there will be people within those categories who feel wronged, and there may be individual stories of hardship and people who feel, well, you know, they maybe genuinely weren't aware of stuff, but there needed to be a collective clean sweep element to some of this to restore trust. And I think, you know, Niall Quinn and people were, you know, they recognised that. And I know there are some soundbites and stuff like Team Ireland and, you know, some of these lines, they're a bit sort of, I understand why they might grate with some people too, that it's a very blatant, obvious rallying cry. But I do think that you look beyond it and on the lines on the page, and there is some substance to it and necessary changes that needed to be made. And I guess you still can't take your eye off the ball in this generally, and I think, pardon the pun, but it, there is an element of, again, and this is my slight caution with all these things, is that, you know, it was in everyone's interest to have a really great, positive announcement today. Mm. But again, real reform isn't just over one cycle. It's longer term. It's ensuring that it creates a new culture of committees everywhere. And I would say, look, Jerry McEnany last week did make quite a good point that, you know, part of the, I mean, I would be very critical of the long-serving administrators and officials who've been there for 25, 30, 35 years. Part of that, in some ways, in certain places, that other people haven't come forward. And really wanted to get involved in administration of football, who might have something to offer, because they've always believed it's a closed shop. And I suppose if somebody's public statements encourage other people out there to believe they can have a say and get involved, then that could be a positive offshoot out of all of this.
Yeah, we'll be interesting to see the reaction to this deal over the next few days, because even looking online briefly over the last couple of hours, there's obviously a lot of people from other sports around the country looking at this, minority sports, who will feel that they have run themselves very well over the last few years and very much got the most out of the scraps of cash that they get from government funding, and suddenly see an organisation that was an absolute basket case getting this huge bailout.
No, and that's going to be a point that's raised. Now, I'm very conscious of, I cover one sport. I'm a fan of that sport, and sometimes, you know, people, you know, in media, they can comment on the sport they cover and end up sort of being seen to lobby for it, and that's not the way it is. But I mean, I would say it is an increase of state funding, but the state funding for football is pretty low, you know, for a sport that, and I mean, I'm not apologising in any way for the madness that unfolded and it's shameful what unfolded, but just strip it away in terms of pure numbers people play in the sport and you know, the contribution that football does make to communities. There's volunteers in football just like there is in other sports, and the return from the state was not great. And I think the angle of pointing out, you know, sort of the betting tax angle, and that I think there's something in that. You can argue that the timing to be making a case for football isn't great when it's been pointed out how dysfunctionally it's been run. And I understand that line of attack. But, you know, when you have a sport that's played widely around the country, we end up pitting them against the other too much, and maybe going down the betting tax route, we're doing that as well and annoying other people, you know, because the horse racing and greyhound provide a lot of jobs and stuff for people. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, thousands upon thousands of people are affected and play this sport, and there's no doubt that I think there is a validity in the state providing more. The optics, yes, I get it. You know, when you've had a big payout to people who've left the association, and that is a factor in your debts, there is obviously there's a discomfort around it. But the broader picture of state funding being doubled for worthy programmes, I honestly don't think people can argue with that aspect of it too much. There's other aspects of sort of the bailout or the deal you could look at and question. But I think the principle of more funding for the sport here, I think it's necessary, and capital infrastructure and investment, because you know, we've seen massive handouts to Connacht Rugby and other examples. But again, it's not to have a pop at them, because they're doing their bit for society too, and so does football.
All right, good stuff, Dan.
Thanks, Nathan.
I've got everything in front of me, so I think I have it. It took me a while to get there.
Okay.
A few of the lads in there earlier on, but I think I've got it yet. The league split up into four different leagues, League A, B, C, and D. If you win a group, you automatically get into a playoff for Euro 2020 by winning a group.
What?
Yeah. So if you win your group, so if we had, say, Wales and Northern Ireland, we then, I think it comes down to, so if we win League B,
yeah,
and now not necessarily B, if say you win all the games, potentially that gives you the chance, you've topped that group. That's how it would work.
So basically the top four teams in each league, so the one from each group, will go forward to the playoffs, assuming they haven't qualified for Euro 2020 via their actual qualifying group.
But regardless of anything, Joe,
not like you can break water
at the end of it, if you top your league, you're going to you'll hit then the playoff system, to go to win the overall winner, which will be League A, B, C and D.
Yeah.
If then, as I said before, if you win that league, you automatically then hit the playoff for the Euros. That's what you get.
When you say winning the league, what do you mean?
You win the League B.
You get one from pot one, one from pot three, and it's a three-team group, and you play them each home and away, and you got four games, and then if we win our league, we get promoted to League A.
I don't understand. If we win our little group with the other two teams, let's say it's...
No, not necessarily that. If you win your league...
Yeah, I was going to say, so if we win our league, say we've Northern Ireland and Wales, and we come out of that group.
Say you win all four games. That's the way that you can maybe explain it a little bit. But if you win all four games, you give yourself a great chance of winning the league, because it's going to come down to goal difference and everything will probably...
So what do you have to do to win your league? I get we have a little group within a league. What do you have to do to win the league, to win League B? You don't know. No, that's fine. You don't know.
Yeah, you killed me there.
No,
yeah, let's not go into that.
No, you screwed up. You told me you can.